Good morning. So we have a special program this morning. We're going to talk about our wonderful, precious, dear, fabulous Sangha. And so if anybody would like to begin by prostrating, we can go ahead and do that now, and then we'll have our opening prayers and dismiss the children and get into the program. Thank you.
Let's start with Shakyamuni Buddha's mantra at the top. If you don't have a gold prayer book, but a white binder, it's on the page that says Kadampa Center Prayers. So we'll chant this three times. Taya ta mune mune maha munaye soha. Taya ta om ne mene maha munaye soha. Taya ta om ne mene maha munaye soha. Now let's say Medicine Buddha's stanza and the mantra. It's on the blue sheet in the white prayer book. Bhagawan with equal compassion for all, whose name when merely heard dispelled the suffering of the lower realms, dispelled of disease and the three poisons, I prostrate to Medicine Buddha, lapis light. So let's chant the mantra seven times. Teata om bekande, bekande, maha bekande, bekande, tata samugate soha. Teata om bekande, bekande, maha bekande, bekande, tata samugate soha. Teata om bekande, bekande, maha bekande, bekande, tata samugate soha. Teata om bekande bekande maha bekande bekande raja samugate soha. Teata om bekande bekande maha bekande bekande raja samugate soha. Teata om bekande bekande maha bekande bekande raja samugate soha. Teata om bekande bekande maha bekande bekande raja samugate soha. And now the four immeasurables in English, three times. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. Okay, now turn to page 37. In the bottom you see Tenrezig's mantra. He's the Buddha of great compassion, so let's chant that eight times. And then Green Tara's mantra, deity of enlightened activity. Let's do that seven times. Om Mani Padme Hum. 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 Om tare tu tare tu re soha. 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 Om tare tu tare tu re soha.
So I think most of you know me. I'm Donna Cease. I'm the spiritual programs coordinator at Kadampa Center. And this is our third time doing a Sangha Appreciation Day. And this year we're going to do something a little bit different. Normally we focus just on the nuns, but our geshis are also part of our Sangha community here at Kadampa Center. So I'm going to open us up with just a few words about the geshis, and then our nuns will each speak for a moment or 10 minutes or whatever moves them. So I just want to point out that we are really lucky and really unusual here at Kadampa Center, within the FPMT family, because we have two resident teachers, Geshe Gelug and Geshe Sangpo, and that's a very unusual thing. It was at our request that Lama Zopa Rinpoche approved having Geshe Sangpo join our family as one of our resident teachers. And we also have four nuns, three of them we see all the time, Venerable Lama, Venerable Kondo, and Venerable Chuki, and all of them became ordained after having been lay members of our center. We also have Venerable Tendron, who is currently teaching in Florida at Tupton Ling. We've also had other members become Sangha, and there was Venerable Chuni, who was our first member, who ordained as a nun, and she unfortunately died in 2009 in India. So we just have really wonderful karma to have so many members of our community who are Sangha and to have them be part of our community. Another way that we're really lucky is that our Geshis made the decision and the commitment to become proficient in English so that they can communicate with us in our own language and teach in our own language. And, you know, that took a lot of hard work on their part. And in a lot of centers, the resident teacher doesn't speak a local language very, very well. So I discovered this week, thanks to Venerable Chuki, that the meaning of the word Geshe. I mean, we know that it's a title. That if you're a Geshe, it means that you've... I'm going to turn around because I realize I'm hiding in the corner and I'm not visible to everybody. So it is a title that indicates that a person has completed a level of study. But also the word Geshe itself, Ge means virtue and She means knowing. So a Geshe is somebody who knows virtue. And I think that fits our Geshes very well. And there are a lot of different types of Geshe degrees. And Geshe Gelug has a Larampa Geshe degree. And that's the highest level that you can reach. There's a lot of vigorous study and debate that goes into becoming a Larampa Geshe in the Sarajay system, and Sarajay is the monastery in which Geshe Gelug and Geshe Sangpo both grew up and did their study. It requires a minimum of 17 years of study to reach any level of Geshe, and then the best students have the opportunity to go on and take an exam and work towards having a Larampa Geshe degree, and that's another 6 years of study. So it's 23 years of study just to reach this Larampa Geshe level that Geshe Gelug has. And then in addition, Larampa Geshes also spend a year studying at a tantric college, and Geshe Gelug was at Gyume Tantric College. And there are four lineages in Tibetan Buddhism, and our lineage, the Gelug lineage, places the most emphasis of all the four on philosophical study. So we have two Geshes who have really, really strong backgrounds, in philosophy. But they also have two very different emphases, and that's something that makes us very lucky too. and it complements, the two complement each other very well, kind of like how wisdom and compassion complement each other. Geshe Gelug, his great strength and his great interest is in philosophy and study and debate and teaching. And so he's very powerful as a teacher in that way and a you know, master of all the texts. Geshe Sangpo also has mastery of all the texts and the philosophy, but his interest and his specialty is in ritual and practice. So he one of the things that's amazing about him is he has high lamas. He's such a master in it. He has high lamas in the Gelug tradition come to him and say, what are the details? How do you do this ritual the right way? And when he was at Sarah J, when his holiness would come to Sarah J and there would be a puja there, Geshe Sangpo would be the one organizing the puja. So he really is quite an expert in that area. And he's helped us a lot here when we have holy days and we need to do special setups with the altar and so forth. He's the one we can go to and say, how do you do this and how do we do it correctly? And if things come up where we're not sure what to do, you know, we can go to him, and he's really a wonderful, helpful resource in that way. And then, as you might be aware, he has once again started offering us opportunities to come and do practices with him, and he'll lead us and show us how to do that. So we just started one with prostrations this past week, and in a couple weeks we'll do mandala offerings. And so, as he's put it to me when he first proposed doing this, you know, study is very important, but it's also important to do practice and make merit. And so, again, it's that complementarity that works really well. Geshe Sangpo also has responsibility for the monks in House 26A at Sarah J Monastery. The monastery is organized with houses. It's not like a big, like we think of for a monastery in Christian tradition. There's a lot of different houses on the big campus of the monastery, and a group of monks will grow up and live in one house, and they're kind of responsible for each other, and Geshe Sangpo is in charge of that. I had the wonderful opportunity a couple of years ago to visit Sarah J with Geshe Sangpo, and it was really amazing to see the great reverence and affection and respect that the monks have in House 26A. They were very excited to have him there. He spent a lot of his time while we were there in meetings with people in the monastery taking care of things for the monks. So besides what he does for us here, he's also responsible for, I think, Kandal, is it maybe 24 monks in House 26A? Yeah. So between 25 and 30 monks that he's responsible for, their well-being, their food, their health care, and so forth. He also works really hard for us here when he's preparing to do a teaching on a Sunday. He works with Venerable Chuki. His English proficiency isn't good enough now to translate everything he knows in his mind in Tibetan, which is probably really mind-blowing if we could speak Tibetan. He knows what he wants to say. He works with her to get it all into English. It all gets written up, and in fact, he sends it off to students of his in Asia who publishes what he teaches here gets published in English in a magazine in Asia. So, not in English. Oh, sorry. It gets published anyway. So we don't get to find it and read it anyway. So I'm going to talk a little bit also about how our Geshes came to be here in Raleigh, in the middle of the Bible Belt. The first part, dependent arising, we had to be here. Thank you, Don. Geshe Gelug was born in Sikkim, which is up near Nepal. And he went to Sarah J when he was about 6 or 7 years old, and studied there. And he was a Geshe at the time that we requested Lama Zopa Rinpoche to appoint a resident teacher for us. So Lama Zopa Rinpoche went to Sarah J Monastery, and he asked for some advice from Yangtze Rinpoche, who was a contemporary of Geshe-la's. who gave him a list of geshe's that he thought were, well qualified. Yangtze Rinpoche is now the director of Maitrepa College in Portland, Oregon. So Rinpoche, Lama Zopa Rinpoche, observed the different monks within the different geshe's within this pool that were recommended to him, and from that observation, he chose Geshe Gelug to be our resident teacher. And it's kind of interesting to imagine Geshe-la's journey. I wasn't here at the center when he first arrived, but I've seen the pictures taken of him, you know, as he stepped off the plane and met all of us for the first time. And he had that same smile that we're all so familiar with, just a big, open, happy smile. You know, but imagine that you're leaving, you've had a very sheltered life to this point. You get on an airplane all by yourself, make it all the way, halfway across the world, all by yourself to meet a bunch of people you really know nothing about. And, you know, you're stepping into this new life. And he was clearly very happy to be here. But, you know, his first few years, I'm sure, were also very difficult for him because he had left everything that was familiar to him. He didn't speak the language very well at the time. He was living with Steep and Ed, a couple that were members of the center. They both worked, so he was alone in the house all day. At the time, he didn't even have an international phone or Skype, so it was very difficult. You know, he couldn't contact other people or speak his own language to people, and yet he persevered for our sake. It makes me think of one of the qualities that's in the Lam Rim, a quality of a qualified teacher, and one is that, you know, you never get discouraged. And in this context, it's, you know, particularly, you never get discouraged with explaining the same things over and over again. And I do see Geshe-la explaining, and I'm often asking, one of those people asking something that he's told me three or four or five times before. So just thinking about all that he gave up for our sake is really quite amazing. Geshe Tsangpo was born in Tibet, and he escaped the country when he was 11. He was in a group of about 21 people. They walked across the Himalayan mountains. The guide that his father had hired kind of misrepresented the trip and didn't explain that it was going to take them, I think, was it 21 days? 21 days to make it. So they only had food for about 3 or 4 days. The guide also abandoned them. So it's a very dangerous trip. If you get caught by the Chinese soldiers, arrest is certain, death is possible. So they traveled at night and slept during the day. They were very lucky because everybody in their group actually made it through the trip with nobody falling off a cliff and nobody getting blind from the sunlight on the snow. So it was really a harrowing trip for an 11-year-old boy with no one else in his family, you know, to do with him. And he did that for the sake of, you know, freedom and the Dharma. And I think, maybe he wanted to see some movies too. I don't know. and then he made his way from Nepal down to Sarajay Monastery, where he and Geshe Gelug became very close. So in 2003, after Geshe Gelug had been here for a few years, he organized a traveling tour of monks from Sarajay to come here. It was called the Shiva Tour. Shiva means peace. And they were going around to various venues and colleges and museums and so forth, doing a program where they would create a sand mandala. There might be singing and dancing. You know, they might do traditional songs and dances and so forth. And this was to raise money to create, to build a better building for House 26A. They had been, you know, in a very, very tiny little house, all of them crowded together, and they now have a much nicer place to live. Many of us formed a very tight bond with Geshe Tsangpo at the time. And I'm just going to make a note while I'm thinking about it. Not only were they raised that money for their house, but they also, at the time we were in the other building, where we were in a rented, dank basement of an office complex, and of the money they raised, they gave Kadampa Center $10,000 toward our purchase of a permanent, you know, impermanent permanent home. Geshe Sangpo came back for a visit a couple of years later, and then he began. Then he came and stayed, and at first he was staying as Geshe Gelug's attendant, and then we made the request to Lama Zopa Rinpoche to allow him to be a second resident teacher here. So we're just really, really lucky to have them. You know, when we begin teachings and Geshe-la comes in, we always we stand, of course, when he comes in, and we do prostrations with Geshe-la. This is completely counter to the normal tradition. Normally, and we often do, you know, I'll remind everybody when we have visiting teachers what's the traditional way to do it, which is that we wait until the teacher is seated and then we prostrate, because it's, you know, that's an expression of respect for what the teacher is holding and bringing to us. But Geshe Gelug is very humble. In fact, even his teacher, Khenpo Rinpoche, mentioned this when he visited one time. You know, Geshe-la is very humble. And out of that humility, he asks us not to prostrate to him after he's seated, but to prostrate with him. Another thing that the teachers will do from tradition is they'll say things, and maybe it's kind of shocking. Geshe-la will sit up here on a Sunday morning and say, "I don't really want to teach. You know, this is, I don't really want to be doing this." Or he'll talk about, "Yeah, I just sit around at home and I don't do anything. I sit on the couch all day." Well, you know, that's not the reality. But this is a tradition that they, you know, it's again, it's part of the humility and part of the tradition that, you don't boast that you have teachings. You don't go and say, you know, "I've got all this knowledge and I want to share it with you." And in fact, Chukyula told me that His Holiness the Karmapa has been known to say, when he's about to teach an audience that includes a lot of Westerners, he'll pause at the beginning and say, "Now this is the place where I'm supposed to say I don't really know anything, but I know that if I do that, half of you are going to get up and leave." So it's just an understanding that when you hear one of the guests you saying they don't know anything, that's just the tradition. And I mentioned that, you know, they don't come and say to us, "I want to teach you the Lam Rim, I want to get you enlightened," although that's their dearest, dearest, deepest wish. But again, traditionally, it is up to us to request the teachings, to ask, please, share your knowledge with us. I actually heard a story about a great Lama who was living up around New York, and he knew a lot of his neighbors, and they all talked with him, and they lived around him for 20 years or something like that before somebody had the thought to say, "Would you teach us?" And then he began teaching. So all that time they lost because they didn't think to ask, "Would you teach us?" So that's part of their humility. And that's one of the reasons, for example, that we do a lot of service for the Geshe's, and we drive them when they're coming to teach or to lead a retreat or to lead a workshop or to lead practice. And that is part of an expression of, we're asking them, "Please come and teach us." And that's part of that ask. So they really are, you know, rare and precious jewels here in our midst. And they're here, you know, it's not, they're here because of us, because all of us here in this room and in our community have the karma, thank heavens, to have these amazing teachers here. So we can all rejoice in that. And then I just want to remind you, you know, at the beginning, like at the end of the opening prayers this morning, and often at the end of other teachings, we will say seven Tara mantras, green Tara mantras, for our Geshe's long, happy, healthy lives. And this came about quite a few years ago. We requested of Khenpo Rinpoche, their teacher. At this time, Geshe Gelug was our only resident teacher. And we had observed that we say long life prayers for a lot of our other teachers and said, can we please have a long life prayer for Geshe Gelug? Normally you don't have a long life prayer for Geshe, but Rinpoche said, say Tara mantras for him. And he recommended that jointly within our community we say 200,000 Tara mantras every year. And we used to have a counter on the website, and it went away at some point, but it's back now. If you wanted to add yours to the count, you can find a link. If you go into the website and at the top where it says About Us, click on that, go down to either of the Geshes, and there's a link on there to get to the counter, and maybe we'll get something on the front page to make it a little easier. Jill and I have talked about that, but I don't think we quite pulled it together by this morning. So that's what I have to say about the Geshes, and I'm going to turn it over to our dear nuns. Each of them will have a chance to speak if they wish to. One of the first things I want to say about our nuns is that their job as Sangha, their real job is to study and practice. But out of the kindness of their hearts, they also do service to our center. So Venerable Lama, who is our senior nun here right now, is our chant master. So you see her in that role on Sunday morning. She leads us in the prayers. She leads pujas. She leads Sunday morning meditation. And she's about to start teaching the Meditation 101 class occasionally. Venerable Kondo, she does a lot of service for Geshe Sangpo. She also works with the family program and the Dharma camp as a support and spiritual touch point. And Venerable Chukila, as I mentioned, she helps Geshe Sangpo with translations. She's a lot of help to me when I have questions about how to do things, and she's also our backup chant master. And then, of course, all of our nuns occasionally teach or lead workshops, and they're also provide help and support when one of our members is sick or is dying, and they help organize the prayers after somebody has passed away. So I am now going to turn it over to our nuns, and whoever would like to go first.
So, I have a question about the Tara mantras. Do we start, does the count start from like today, or can we start from like January? Or
start from January if you have a good idea of what you've done.
Okay, good. I guess I should say something about myself, okay? I started here as a layperson. Oh, hey, Rose. I became a member of the Kadampa Center in October 2004. I looked that up. And I asked Geshe-la around, I don't remember, maybe around 2000... Well, not too many months afterwards, I asked Geshe-la if I could ordain. And then he said, wonderful. I'm so happy for you. That's great. Okay, so do 10,000 of these. And then come back. So I did, or maybe 1,000, like Refuge and Bodhicitta prayers. And then he said, oh, that's good. Now do 10,000 of these. And, he kept asking me to do certain preparatory practices. And so he's the one that finally arranged for me to, two gentlemen from Mexico to ordain also here in this Kadampa Center, where he arranged for Khyentsen Rinpoche to come. He was at the time the abbot of Gurmay Tantric College, in southern India. And I think that was probably historical. I don't think the Kadampa Center has ordained anyone before in the center and since. Okay. And Tenjin-la was there. She was one of the nuns who was the witness. And So in addition to what Donna said, I also do animal liberation. Geshe-la approved that. You know, Geshe Sampo was actually in charge of all the animal liberations, but we would only do maybe once a year or once every 2 years or something. And so I wanted to do it more often, especially on a holy day when the merit is multiplied by 100 million. So we liberate many worms, fishing worms. We stopped doing, we decided not to do crickets because they would come into the gampa, you know. We don't want to, you know, step on them. And, let's see. Oh, yeah. And then, of course, we've had cats, dogs, a snake. We've liberated that. Oh, rat. Did we have a rat? Bunnies. Okay. So, they have better memories than I do. So, and we'll have another one on Sacadawa. At 3 o'clock at Sacadawa. And we are here. I mean, if it weren't for the center, if it weren't for Geshe-la, but especially the center, there wouldn't be any nuns here. There wouldn't be any Geshe's here. So I think that we are sort of undermining the virtue and the karma and the wonderful acts of kindness that all of you have been doing all these years. You know, if it weren't for you all, we wouldn't be able to be in robes. You know, so we you know, our job is to pay back, you know, for all that you have done for us. And, you know, whenever I have a request, like if I want to do the meditation circle, it's always been very welcome, very welcoming. You know, I've always had a wonderful response from the board, from Jill and Donna to do these strange things, requests. And so I feel very, very fortunate. So in addition to praying for people who have passed away, we also pray for people who are still alive, you know, for people who are having problems, you know, health problems. I've gone to people's homes and done medicine Buddha pujas. So, you know, you're welcome to just ask us, and we'll certainly try. We've also gone to hospitals. We visited people not only in their homes but in hospitals also, people who are dying. I guess Peter's not here. When he was injured, I went there because I think everyone else was on a retreat, so I was the only one there in town, so I went. So we also will visit hospitals also anytime. I think Kundalini went to visit Jim Barnes before he passed. So we will do, and we will say prayers, especially those that Geshe-la recommends that we do. And, of course, we'll always pray for you, all of you, every day. Anything? So, okay.
Thanks. Yeah, it's kind of hard to know what to say. We're going to have some questions at the end, right? Yeah. So that's probably more important than whatever I think you might want to hear, but I will just say a couple of things. So I started coming to Kadampa Center in 2003, back in the basement, and started going to Discovering Buddhism, and I was really trying to work with my anger, and I found some tools there that really helped. I tried out what the teaching said, and wow, it kind of helped a little bit, you know, and so that's kind of what hooked me. And then somewhere along the line I read that ordaining was the fastest means to get into enlightenment. And I thought, I wonder about that. And just started thinking, and I'm a really deliberate person, so spent a long time contemplating. But really, like most of you, started out just, you know, looking for something is what, you know, brought me in the door initially. And so then I spent some time talking with Geshe Gelug and with Tendrin Law about ordaining and what it would mean and whether that would be good for me, and just did a lot of exploration. And Geshe-la had, you know, approved in theory that it would be a good thing. So he suggested that I go to Dharamsala and study Tibetan there. And so I did do that, and spent a year doing that, and then decided for sure I wanted to ordain. And so then a few months later, I was able to ordain actually in Dharamsala with the same all three of us have been ordained by the same teacher, all three in different places, but so Geshe Gelug and Geshe Tsongpo's teacher, Khenpo Rinpoche. I think, you know, Lamala touched on what I most wanted to say today, which is that I just have so much gratitude for being able to walk this path, and I really thank Kadampa Center for that, because without Kadampa Center, I wouldn't have started down the path, and then Geshe Gelug wouldn't have been here to help advise me and, you know, all of those things. And so every single person that's here today is Kadampa Center. If it's your first time here, if you volunteer extensive hours, if you've donated, if you come just once in a blue moon, I mean, all of these things come together to make Kadampa Center Kadampa Center. And so I'm so grateful, because ordination certainly isn't for everyone. It's a great path for me, and I'm grateful for it. The Buddha made it clear, though, that, you know, there need to be four kinds of people to be together to, you know, make it all work. There need to be the lay men and women who have vows, and then the fully ordained monks and nuns. And so, you know, we all work together to keep the Dharma alive. And so it's just amazing for me to have this opportunity to be in robes, because for me, you know, people sometimes ask me, isn't it hard to have this list of all these things you can't do, or, you know, something like that. And for me, you know, seeing the vows are protection. They help me know what I've decided I want, you know, and just to keep that in mind, as opposed to, oh, there are these things I can't do, you know. And so that's just very helpful for me to have that in my heart and mind every day. Seems like I had something else I wanted to say. Another thing about ordination that I don't know if everybody knows is that robes don't represent a certain level of achievement. You know, like in some, maybe in a Christian tradition, to be a priest means you've completed a certain amount of school or something like that. And, you know, of course, you've seen, like, pictures of young monks and nuns that are, you know, like Geshe Gelug was 7 when he ordained, you know. It's more about a declaration of intention of where you're going, you know. So having the robes for me, you know, are this constant reminder of what I hope to achieve, not about what I've already done or realized. So I guess that's it. It's, you know, it's not for everyone, but it's great for me. So.
Okay. Good morning. This makes sense. I came as a center first, and I ordained last. So this is a statement, again, of my slow learning curve. But I'd like to, I'm going to actually start kind of with not where I started from, but I've ordained about 4.5 years. And so this is kind of like a status report as opposed to history. In January, thanks to the center, again, generosity, I received some financial support to attend a 2-week teaching on the Vinaya at Srivasti Abbey in Northeast Washington State. The Cliff Notes description of the Vinaya is it's the guidebook for being a nun or a monk. And since all of us, when we ordained, this ceremony was in Sanskrit and Tibetan, we didn't really come out of it with a whole bunch of information about what we just agreed to. And you often found it out by, oh, by the way, you can't do that. Or you should do this. So it was an historic teaching in the sense that it was the Vinaya in the Chinese tradition, which is really quite similar to the Tibetan tradition, but there are, you know, some differences, none of which I know. But full training in the Vinaya in English for a Western nun is almost unheard of. You know, almost unheard of. So thanks to the commitment of Master Wu Yin, who's a head of the luminary nunnery in Taiwan and Tutpin Children, they organized this so that we could receive the benefit of it. The reason that's kind of important for me is I can't speak for my two sister nuns, but I must say that the notion of whose idea would this still comes up on a regular basis. And so kind of understanding better about what I committed to was a way of my, you know, addressing that thought and saying, na, 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 na. So, but several things came out of it. And that's kind of what I'd like to share and then talk a little bit about Srivasti Abbey. One is, I've had two interesting nightmares since I ordained. One is that since there's no buttons on these robes, my first one was I'm going to walk down the street and it's all going to become untied. That after about a year went away. The second nightmare was that the Sangha squad was going to show up at my door and say, we've gotten a bad report, we want the robes back. What came out of the time at Srivasti Abbey was the fact that if the Sangha squad did show up at the door, my response would be, sorry, that's my decision, not yours. But the second thing is that nuns come in all shapes, obviously, sizes, obviously, and styles, and that we are not cookie cutters in terms of how we practice and how we serve. So one of the things that I wanted to say here is that, and we are, the three of us are, and four of us are actually very, our commitment to our vows, is the same, but how that manifests for everyone around us is very different. Hama was one of the most amazing practitioners that you will ever meet. There is absolutely nothing that shows up that she doesn't go, oh, I'll add that to my practice, or guess what I realized, you know. So she has this wonderful, I mean, besides what you see her doing here, and she does it out of incredible generosity, because very often, you know, she is so committed to practice that she would be very happy to stay home and practice rather than being here with us and serve. And so she kind of breaks up her practice to come and do things with us and for us. And Geshe-la says that. Geshe-la says, you know, talks about her as a practitioner and is always supporting her. Chuki, and this is from Geshe-la, and my perception is not only a practitioner, but an extraordinary scholar. And it is only her health issues that have interfered with that blossoming to a degree. And she is an incredible. You can see Geshe-la's face drop when he comes to a teaching on Wednesday night and Chuki isn't here. Not that we don't help, but, you know, she knows the Tibetan. She knows, and so she's an extraordinary gift. So if any, there are any spare prayers, say them for her health so we can take advantage of her more. Tendrin Law, who's not with us right now, some of you may know her or not know her, is an amazing student and teacher. Everyone here is, all of these nuns are here, teachers in their different ways. And she was also a center member and ordained. She ordained with Geshe Sopa at Deer Park in Madison, Wisconsin. And she has a renunciation that I can only wish for in terms of really seeing the the drawbacks of samsara and wanting to do anything she can to get out of it as fast as possible and to assist others and stuff. And then there's me, or I. Then there is I. I don't do any of those things. I like to run around and do things. So I do things like drive the flower mobile when Lama Zopa Rinpoche is here, manage the budget for the flowers and saying, no, you can't have that. It's too expensive. Raise money for Geshe-la. He wants me to try and find money for one of his things that he wants. And Geshe-la says, all of those things are fine, Kondala, but it would be good if you could study and practice more. And I came back from Stravasti Abbey slightly reformed, but it's rapidly wearing off. I referred to it as going to non-reform school. But my commitment, you know, is the same, I think. And so we're all really different, you know. I say hello to people, you know, I'm Italian, as Geshe-la says, you know. I asked him one day if I could hug somebody, because, you know, you're not supposed to hug as a nun, especially if you're fully ordained, especially a guy. And I said to Geshe-la, I was Italian before I was a nun, and he said, oh, don't worry about it, Kondala, go ahead. You know, all of these people were really, really, really wanted to, when they ordained, you know, get to enlightenment, help people, yada, yada, yada. I just, this is what I thought I'd like to do for the rest of my life. And when I asked, talked to Geshe-la about it, and he asked me all the proper questions and stuff, and he said, now, what are you most afraid of about ordaining? And I said, I'm afraid you'll tell me I can't swim. So you can kind of don't have much renunciation. But I'd like to talk about Sangha, and this goes back to Stravasti Abbey, is that the function of the Vinaya is threefold. It's to create harmony in our minds, as Tukhi Law was said. It's to be create harmony among the Sangha. How do we live together? And it's to create and maintain harmony with the community. And that is the function of all of the vows that we take. And every vow arose because there was a challenge to that. And the Buddha, he originally didn't say anything. There were no vows originally. It just came up. You know what so-and-so was doing? Do you think that's right? And a lot of people are talking about it, and the Buddha would think about it and say, okay, well, we'll make a vow about that. And so the Vinaya is really, really a living thing. And there's I'll use an analogy from Christianity. You know, when Christ was going to do his ascension, I consider it the Christian peri-nirvana, he looked at the disciples and said, you know, upon my rock I will build this church, my church. And actually the Buddha did the same thing with Sangha, in the sense that he said, without a healthy Sangha, as long as there's a healthy Sangha, the Dharma will continue and flourish and be available to us in the world. And so we really are incredibly interdependent in terms of the Dharma remaining. The generosity of people that make it possible for us to stay in robes, and come in robes, and our living and our vows, which enable us to serve the community and create harmony with the community. So that's kind of where I'm at. A little bit about Stravasti Abbey. Trutpen Shodron has been a nun, I think, since 1976. She's a Westerner. Her commitment to, and this is talking about, this is kind of the thing about nuns, her commitment to supporting nuns' study, practice, and achieving ordination is extraordinary. She established the abbey in 2003. She said when she made the down payment for the property, she didn't know where the next payment was going to come from. It's all paid for. And it is, I was there, and so if you can imagine anyone who knows me, getting up at 5:30 in the morning, sitting for an hour and a half before a cup of tea, then breakfast, and of course anybody who knows how attached I am to my groceries, they eat in ordination order, and I came at the end of the line, which meant some of the good stuff was gone. Then service and study, and then the day there was practice, and then the day ended with another, you know, hour and a half kind of quiet time for meditation. And that is open to all of us. That's what's extraordinary. The Shravasti Abbey, I know it's far away, Shravasti Abbey, like the Kadampa Center, charges for nothing. Absolutely nothing, including staying there in your room and board. They ask you to, you know, make an offering because it's not free. You never know what you're going to eat because the only food they have is what's offered. They don't shop. You know, she said to her supporters, if you do not feed us, we will starve. And they forgot to give her groceries one week, and she was eating, in January, she was eating carrots out of the garden. So that was the last time that happened. But she didn't tell that story. Lay people told that story about how they got real serious about organizing food. So, and she's a bit of an outlier. She's a bit of a rebel. And so that fit for me because, you know, I haven't found an order I've ever wanted to follow. But the mission of the Shravasti Abbey is creating peace in a chaotic world. And I just share that kind of with you because I'll be going back there, so I'll probably be asking for help again, to study and kind of renew whatever reform happened for me while I was there. But we come in different shapes and sizes and in different tendencies towards service. And I have to say the last thing kind of that I realized when I was there is I do try and do service, but I was a social worker for 30 years and I was really done doing social work when I left it. And so sometimes when I was asked to do things, some, you know, because there's nothing about putting on robes that changes your mind. You bring all your crap. You know, matter of fact, you have a belt to hold it in with. I would be, you know, kind of, oh God, I'm retired. Why do I have to do that? Well, when I was at Shravasti Abbey, it finally dawned on me that I better give up the notion that I'm retired because I'm not. I became a nun. I'm just not getting paid. Although the center where it can and people here are incredibly generous, and I have to say one of the things that I want to share about all the offerings that are made to us is if absolutely necessary, we use it for our requisites, but if not absolutely necessary, what we do is we use it to support our practice, whether it be attending teachings or, you know, resources that we need for our practice. And I'm done. Thank you.
So I'd like to open it if anyone has questions for any of the nuns, and we would welcome those. Do you have one, Julie?
When is Sakha Dawa, and what do we have planned for that day?
I can actually take that. Sakha Dawa is this year. It's on the 29th of May, which is the Tuesday, right after Memorial Day weekend. We will have an animal liberation. We will have a puja. And then if there's anyone who wants to request refuge, and this is the great opportunity, refuge is making a commitment to the Buddhist path. And again, Geshe will offer that on Sakha Dawa, but again, getting sort of back to, that's actually something we need to request. So I'm going to be I haven't sent an email out yet, but I'll be sending out an email and letting people know, and there'll be an opportunity to register if you want to do that. So.
In the Eastern cultures and also in other faith streams, and even in this country, there's an opportunity for nuns to live together and be supported from some outside sources. But my understanding is that you all have to take care of yourselves. You have to financially support yourself. You don't have an opportunity to live together with not just the three or four of you, but with other nuns to support your practice and all of that. Is there any thought or movement toward having an opportunity to do that, to form some kind of a nunnery or any way that helps you in that direction?
I mean, they may chime in. At this time, there's a nunlet. When Tendrin comes back, she and I share a house together. I mean, we meet all the expenses for it and together, but I refer to it as the nunlet. Currently, I mean, some of the issue for going forward is, you know, commitment to family members in terms of being present to them and caring for them. You know, they not available to live in community, but practically at this point, there's no project, no plan to even have a nun's house that where nuns could choose. You know, these four nuns could choose to live together. So, and I that's the way it is for right now and stuff. So, thank you.
Oops, there we go. I'll keep this up here.
I just wanted to say thank you to each one of you for everything that you have done for the Kadampa Center, and that I have learned a lot from just the times that I do come, and that I practice even less than you guys. So, but I am getting better. So thank you for all that you have taught me, and it has really helped me to say no when I know that something's going to cause me trouble. I'm learning to run away from it as fast as I can. So thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, just one more awareness, I think. I think it's really important for all of us to understand that while we support our Sangha, we support our monks, we support our nuns, we are not able at this time to do it to the extent that I think that many of us believe that we are. So the nuns really get just little offerings from Kadampa Center itself. They don't get a salary per se. Okay, so the offerings that we make that you see people making during holy days or during special days like this, the envelopes that we actually have are just little gifts of money and things that we can donate ourselves personally to our Sangha, because it's up to us as our community to help support our monks and our nuns. Okay, so when we start talking about it, you start thinking about what people get, the donations that we get and that we give to Kadampa Center are to Kadampa Center, and they work to help with so many of the expenses that we have here, whether it's air conditioning and the mortgage and things like that, and then the minimal salary that we pay our staff. But the nuns are actually doing the majority of this out of the generosity of their hearts. And so when you see people giving, you know, offering katas and giving envelopes and stuff, many times those are donations to them from each of us. And then the other thing I wanted to offer is many times you probably might have seen me serving, okay, when we have different meals and stuff. And we're trying to kind of reinstitute our Sangha care in a little bit more of a formalized manner. Jill and I have talked about it. Donna and I have talked about it. But I'm going to offer, if anybody is willing and wants to learn more about how to care for our Sangha and the things that we can do, please come and talk to me, talk to Jill, talk to Donna, because when we're serving, there's a little bit of protocol to it, but most of it's the generosity from our hearts, okay? And it's from things, you know, maybe I'll cook at home or maybe I'll try to serve lunch to them or something. That's from my heart to them. They don't expect it. They don't ask for it. They're not requesting it. It's what we can do to take care of them. And so sometimes I can get a little elaborate, okay? Some of my OCD stuff can take over. But it's what we choose to give to them. They're not requesting it. So the special things that we can do for our Sangha to help take care of them, because they do so much for us. So if anybody has any questions about that, would like to get involved with some of the things that we do for our Sangha, you know, there's going to be more coming, but for sure talk to Donna or Jill or me, and then we'll see how to get you involved. It's part of, you know, it's some ways it's a very selfish thing for me, because the more that I can do for them, it's the extra time I get with them. And that's worth its weight in gold to me. Okay, so this is really very self-serving. All right, so... But please ask me and ask Donna if you guys would like to get involved with some of the Sangha care. There's so many little things that we can do that would make their lives so much easier. And so I just wanted to say that part.
I'd like to make a comment about that. Okay. So the reason that, you know, there is the Sangha care and so forth is, as Geshe-la says, it's so that from your side it creates merit. When you see us as some, like, Arya Sangha, someone who has realized emptiness or whatever, so forth, then if you serve us, then, or, you know, those who are ordained, then you create a tremendous amount of merit. But it doesn't mean that we have any, realizations, or if our practice is of, you know, any better than yours. When we ordain, as Trigula said, it doesn't mean that we know anything at all. Period. You know, for example, I was just asked to do certain recite certain mantras, tar praises, and so forth to get preparation. They were just preparation practices. He didn't say you have to memorize this or know this or take this class or take Discovering Buddhism or whatever. There was no requirement. So I just wanted to say that, okay, yeah, I do some practices. I do practices in the morning and evening, sometimes in the afternoon, you know, and then I do some other things maybe during the day. But the whole idea is to work on your mind. And people who are Buddhists, non-Buddhists, there are so many people who are so kind and so good and so virtuous. I think that it doesn't matter. You know, it doesn't matter whether you're ordained or not. You know, you're much, much more. You're bodhisattvas. And I think that there's too much emphasis, you know, maybe in this order, about venerating Sangha. You know, I think that if your hearts are that golden, you could be teaching. You should be on the throne teaching. I mean, it's just, I learned so much, you know, from that. And I really treasure people like, you know, like you all. And I feel like, you know, when you kiss your feet, you know, I just can't get my mind around that. You know, I feel like I should be serving you, you know. And, yeah, well, but you know more. I mean, I shouldn't treat me like this. Why are you giving me water? Why do I have a special cup? You know, it's just, you know, I want to give you the special cup. So it's just, and then that's what it is. You don't have to do these practices if, Geshe-la says, if you can mean your mind, you know, positive all the time. And many of you do that. So, but I have to. I have to shave my head. I have to wear these robes. You know, it works for me. It helps me. You know, it helps me. I have to do those practices. Otherwise, if I don't do that, my mind is, you know, pretty much in the gutter. So this is what I have to do. This is my path. But I'm not, you know, your path is just golden. You know, you're amazing people, amazing. So I just wanted to mention that.
Go, Hamo. There was two things I forgot to mention that I think is important about the center, and the great thing that the center is doing is the incredible vitality of the family program. It's extraordinary, and all of the people that create that. And one of the things I have the privilege to do is kind of be their resident storyteller, and it fits me because I like to play, and so getting me around a bunch of kids, and so I get to play, and people think I'm working, which is always good. And the other thing, when I talked about serving Geshe-la, is that you've heard Geshe-la talk about the benefits of pilgrimage, the benefits of going to holy places. He doesn't talk about it a lot, but he does talk about it some. And as a result of that, he has asked Geshe Sangpo and I to organize another trip to Sarah J. Monastery, and this time to Bodh Gaya. And the advantage to that is from Bodh Gaya you can go to four of the most important pilgrimage sites for Buddhists. So there'll be information coming out in the next little while. I know this is an infomercial, but, you know, when Geshe-la looked at me and said, are you going to do this? I just went, and he just started laughing and said, oh, Kondaloff Rose. I am not a travel agent. So, but I just wanted to, there's a group here, and just, you know, wanted to let people know that, you know, that's something I'm going to be attempting to do when more information will come out. And so that's it. Sorry for the infomercial.
Okay. So Jill has a question requesting the nuns to explain what merit is. Who would like to take this?
She brought it up.
Well, I mean, I just have a simple explanation. You know, merit is positive potential, right? And so we need merit for any kind of progress or realization, right? And so you can create merit by setting a positive intention and doing even the smallest thing. You know, they say offering one mouthful of food to an ant with the proper intention gains merit, you know. So you can gain merit by doing practices. You can gain merit by, you know, holding a door for someone if you've got a kind wish in your heart, you know. But any way that we do positive things will build our positive potential that will then result in realizations that help us progress down the path.
Thank you. Anything to add?
So I just want to say thank you for each one of you, because I have learned so much from each one of you and your teachings and my interactions with you. And I know we've kind of talked about that, but this is a very simple question. I've always wanted to know, what is your day-to-day like? I really have. And then I wonder, too, when you talk about different cultures being Western society, what also are nuns in other cultures and societies? Are they, do you have similar practices? Are they different? I'm just curious, and maybe this is, might be a little remedial. I apologize, but I've always wondered.
I'll talk about other cultures first. One of the projects I'm working on is funding support for a nunnery in Tibet. And this is, so their day would be, you know, like Huamo's, they're up very early doing prayers and practices. Each nunnery or monastery will have different practices that they may do. Then there's, you know, the work of the monastery. You know, you gotta clean it, feed it, you know, I mean, that's, and there aren't people that come in and do that. They do it. Actually, I have a very short video clip of of they're going to be, they were trying to build a house for their teacher and that lived at a monastery, and so they there's a picture of the nuns breaking rocks, you know. So and then study. And that's happening more and more in nunneries now, and it's always happened in monasteries in our tradition, but more and more. So that would be, if you were at Sarah J, after, you know, morning prayers and breakfast, well, you ate breakfast during morning prayers, there would be study and debate, and then there'd be lunch, and there'd be a puja at lunch, and there'd be a break, small break, and then there'd be study, and then there would be maybe dinner, and then there would be a puja, and study and debate. In Sarah J, basically their schedule is from about 5:30 in the morning until anywhere from 11 to 12 at night. 10 to kind of formal debate ends at 10, but they keep going and stuff. So that would be, and that would be it, that would be in a nunnery at Shravasti Abbey. My daily schedule is pretty wimpy. You know, I get up, I try to do some practices. I don't do practices before I have tea. Then take care of the affairs of daily life and sometimes try to study or work on a project and, unfortunately watch Netflix.
Let's see. Well, I get up in the morning, and then I do practices, quite a few prayers, light offering prayer, and then other mantras, blessing speech mantra, confession to 35 Buddhas with prostrations, Vajrasattva practice. So what I do is I try to get all my prayers in the morning, so that no matter what happens, you know, during the day or at the end, I would have done all my commitments in the morning. So that's what I try to do in the morning. And I get up whenever, you know, sometimes with the alarm, sometimes, you know, I'll give myself a break. Because like yesterday, I slept in a little because today I'm taking precepts. And that's what Rinpoche asked me to do, was to take precepts at least once a week or once every 2 weeks or whatever. Once or twice a week for the rest of my life. So so that's one of the things that I do. And okay, so then, you know, like Tara praises, Guru Yoga I do, Lama Tsongkhapa Guru Yoga, a lot of mantras. And then after that, after breakfast, then I'll read some Lama Tsongkhapa texts, those short texts like Three Principal Aspects of Path and so forth. And then I'll review the Lam Rim outline. And what I like to do is I like to walk at Lake Johnson. And what I do is I repeat the outline while I'm walking. And that's why I look kind of strange. I have this weird expression on my face, and I don't look at you. and then there's afternoon prayers, and then maybe some readings, and then I do watch a lot of YouTubes. I love to watch those from the Shoah Foundation. They're testimony by the Holocaust survivors. I don't know why I'm very attracted to that, and other things. I change my schedule all the time just to fit whatever, you know, to remedy whatever mindset I have. So sometime I'll be really tight, you know, at this time do this, at this time do that, and that. And other times I'll go really lax and just do this at the end of the day, just do that, so I just change my schedule all the time. But right now it's kind of strict, and then I try to do some cleaning, you know, during the day you have to clean and whatever, and then you
do meditation, sitting meditation practice, and end the day with that. Yeah. Oh, and then after evening prayers also.
Okay. She walks, I swim.
I have a morning and a evening practice, and consistently do them probably about an hour each time, depending. Depends a lot on my health, so if I'm having a bad day, I have abbreviated versions of things, and on good days, I expand it out to maybe a couple of hours. And then I try to do some reading every day, even if it's just a couple of pages. If it's not a great day, I try to at least just read a page or two of some Dharma text to help me have something to think about, something to focus on. Right now, bodhicitta seems to be my theme. So, and then I listen a lot to previous teachings. So I try to roughly transcribe most of Geshe-la's teachings so that I really... it helps me to just, you know, really pay attention. Because if I'm just listening, you know, I can space out. But if I'm actually typing it, then I have to really go back if I spaced out. So, and so I try to do that. I don't do that every day. I do that most days. But if I'm having bad days, I don't have the energy for that. So that's probably the main way that I stay focused. And then, you know, I goof off too. I mean, we all goof off, so. I often watch TV with my mom in the evening, so.
I think we might have time for one more question if anyone has one.
I just want to add, well, first of all, I want to thank our nuns for doing this. Not all of them are comfortable sitting up here talking about themselves and their choice to become, about their situation, you know, about being ordained and being part of our community. And so I really appreciate that, because it's very important for us as a center to be aware and to appreciate them. So I'm thankful to all of you. And I just want to piggyback a little bit on what Sandy said about supporting the nuns. Last year in 2017 was the first time that our board of directors added to our annual budget a line item of just a few thousand dollars to have money available to support the nuns for things like Venerable Kondila going to this workshop at Srivasti Abbey in the Vinaya, and also just to provide them with some general support. And that's very important for us karmically, you know, as a center to support our Sangha, and that creates the cause to continue to have Sangha in our lives in a spiritual sense, not just in a monetary sense. And all of us also can do that individually. Every year when we have Sangha Day, any donations that we receive in the box will go to our Sangha members. You can also make offerings to them at any time. As I think Sandy was the one who mentioned that, you know, you'll see during pujas, people will come up and offer envelopes to them. And you can do that on a casual basis. You can always just leave an envelope for them on their table if you weren't making formal offerings. So those are two opportunities. If you don't do it today, you can always make offerings to them. So thank you again to all of you, and to all of you for being here. Thank you. Closing prayers.
Okay, so if you turn to page 246, we'll read the dedication from Master Shantideva. In the gold prayer book, it's on the back of the seat that says Kadamba Center Prayers in the white binder. May all beings everywhere, plagued by sufferings of body and mind, obtain a notion of happiness and joy by virtue of our merits.
May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with a mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness, and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvests. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be freed from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid and those bound be freed. May the powerless find power and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then, may I too remain to dispel the miseries of the world. Om tare tu tare tu re soha. Om tare tu re soha. Om tare tu tare tu re soha. Om tare tu re soha. Om tare tu tare tu re soha. Om tare tu re soha. Om tare tu tare tu re soha.
Good morning. Excuse me. So I've given you a 2 weeks break for asking for different help ideas around here. So the one for this week is we're going to help Elise this week. She doesn't know what I'm getting ready to say. So she has been doing a tireless job in outreach for years and years and years, and I don't think anybody ever knows because it's all happening when you're not here. Schools that come in, she goes out. No one could possibly imagine what she's been doing. So she's also been doing collections for years, four times a year. And then board relationships with Interfaith Alliance. So we want to start to parse some of these jobs out because it's just a lot to do. So collections is something we've already had one. So we had a successful personal, what do we call it, basic needs collection. That went really, really well. So if you would just consider this role, all you have to do is three more for this year and then just continue four times a year deciding what it is. You can talk to me, other people, and talk to Elise, right? She'll be here for you for how to do the job. I'll help you with all the promotional materials. So it's really just making sure it happens and getting it out there and just taking that on as your thing. So if you'd like to do that position, just let me know, and I will hook you up with Elise. So thank you for your service. Oh, Heather, do you want to? She's prepared to tell you about fun stuff. Not that service isn't fun.
This can be fun with service, too. So it's party time again.
Yay!
It is beautiful. The sun, the season has finally changed. So the colors. I apologize for all you allergy sufferers. So Saturday, write on your calendars, put it in your phone. Saturday, September 28th is going. Or April 28th. Oh my gosh. Skip to the fall. April 28th, 5 p.m. is going to be our spring fling party. Cause it's party time in the spring. And so we're doing a potluck. It's going to be kind of nice, low key potluck, some yard games, kid activities. We're going to be out around the stupa and outside and a little bit inside, but mostly outside this time. So get your picnic gear together, your potluck, whatever dish you like. And if there's any musicians in the house, we would love to have a little open mic moment where you can come and play, can jam together in harmony, creating harmony. But we definitely welcome that. So, and if you are interested in volunteering for setup and breakdown, we're always looking for those too. So you can go to Jill or myself. Thanks.